You pressed play on this podcast with the click of curiosity. It is another dimension, a dimension of mind, a dimension where nothing is sacred and everything is explainable. You're streaming into a land of both inside and outside, of things and ideas. You've just crossed over into the midside.
Welcome to the midside, where we know you'll never reach peak farce. And I say that because a buzzword I've been hearing recently in relation to the pandemic, in relation to COVID-19, is peak cases. The virus is peaking. But we'll get into that later. First, allow me to introduce myself. I'm your host, Justin Amosneski, and I'd like to thank everyone who has purchased my novel, The Cut. So far, I've received a lot of positive feedback. You can go in Discord and see some of that. Also, if you're interested in buying it, you can do so in multiple formats, including a signed version at themidside.com/thecut. Joining me this trip from Dale's Lawn, identifying as a woman to forgo his white male gay privilege, William Green.
Hello, hello. Yeah, I think mine's in the mail, I hope. I think I saw a shipment notification, so get my signed copy soon. Doing a bunch of prep work for Thanksgiving. Got cleaning the house, buying the food, braving the post-apocalyptic world. It's funny, Justin, the traffic is slowly returning to L.A., so I'm not sure how much social distancing people are doing right now, but it's not quite normal levels, but it's certainly not pre-Thanksgiving levels, which, as you know, everyone conducts a mass exodus before Thanksgiving here in California. Same thing with Christmas, because no one's sane grandparents live in California. So,
Yeah, New Year's is completely empty in Los Angeles. Yeah. That's a time of year where if you ever want to go to Los Angeles and not have to deal with the people, go during New Year's.
Yep, definitely.
I think they're just following Gavin Newsom's lead, though. I mean, he's not socially distancing.
Going to the French Laundry and spending money, getting drunk and having them have to close the door because of how drunk and disorderly you are.
Sure. Don't know what you're talking about. I was referring to, is that where the video of him not wearing a mask at a gathering is?
I think so, yeah.
Oh, okay.
Very, very expensive restaurant in San Francisco. Or not in San Francisco, in wine country.
I'm sure that totally wasn't paid for with taxpayer money either, right?
Oh, no, it wasn't. It was the lobbyists.
Oh, excuse me. Sorry.
How dare you, Justin?
How dare I? Well, how dare I with a lot of topics this week. Why don't we just get into it, right? Let's do it in Life on the Midside. Take a good look around. Does life really suck? Are we just complaining? I hope that this mic is on. Because I'm on a roll here. I hope this is making some sense. I hope that you throw up your hands and sing it and tell all the haters that they should just shut up and As always, if you would like to support this show, you can do so on Patreon or Locals. Patreon is per episode. Locals is per month. You just go to themidside.com/Patreon or themidside.com/Locals. Any support, as little as a dollar, is greatly appreciated. Since this episode is being released on Thanksgiving week, William, I wanted to start with a nice positive question here, and I don't want to do the typical, what are you thankful for? I'd rather do, in the year 2020, where everything's going crazy, I'd rather talk for a couple minutes about what's the best thing that happened to us this year. And the reason I want to frame it that way is everyone's talking about how terrible of a year 2020 is, and certainly there are a lot of bad things that happened, right? But I don't think that means there weren't any good things that happened.
Yeah.
So I'd like to personally start. And I just want to say that moving to Florida is the best decision I've made in a very, very long time. I wouldn't even want to say I'm thankful for it, because to me, like, saying you're thankful is almost like things that are outside of your control. It's like, you know, I'm thankful for people being in my life and thankful to, you know, things working out. It's like outside of your control. But something like this, I made this decision and I made it at the right time and it worked out very well. I don't know, William, I honestly don't know how I would be surviving if I was in your position. If I was still in California, if I was still in Anaheim, especially with that gym, 24-hour fitness at Garden Walk that I went to close down,
yeah,
and not be able to go, I don't know what I would do. I'm back at the gym now. I'm working my job. The biggest inconvenience in my entire life right now is the social distancing measures due to the law and masks. And we'll get into that in a little bit. But beyond that, life is pretty normal here. And so my life, I think, is going to be the best it can be considering the conditions of our overall culture in this country. What about you?
Well, like a good interviewee and a terrible comedian, I'm going to reject the premise here. I think I don't like the question, Justin. I'd rather, and it kind of goes on what you just were touching on. I would change it to what's the best thing you earned this year? And
okay, yeah, phrasing wise, yes. Yeah. I mean, that's essentially what I said, right?
Exactly.
Yeah, okay, fair. Fair.
That's why I was blank in the show notes. I was like, I don't like this question. I thought you wanted to surprise me. Oh, no.
I thought you wanted to surprise me.
Well, it's hard to narrow it down to one. But I think the fact that my business partner and I were able to guide our store, our restaurant through this whole crisis at the same time that we were growing our management team, right? Like, we've got a manager and an assistant right now that are just doing great, right? Like, they're both fairly new at this kind of management. So, you know, when you're first a frontline manager, it's always the toughest, right? That's the toughest transition. And like, imagine having your first, like the first like 4 months of your frontline management be helping a bunch of, you know, scared 20-year-olds and 30-year-olds go through this whole COVID crisis, right? And all the changing regulations and the riot and, you know, the store being smashed up and all this stuff, right? And on top of all that, like actually just growing them as in the blocking and tackling of being a manager. And that's probably something I'm the most proud of that I've earned this year so far is really, you know, I invested all this time in, and not just because of the, you know, the outright emergency situations, but just being disciplined and every week, you know, focusing, setting priorities, setting things to do, setting things to teach them, to mentor them on every week, even with the crisis going on. And it's paying off.
Well, I think that's a really great thing, because what you're basically saying is life goes on, and what you're proud of. And I think it's awesome. And I think it's an awesome, you know, I obviously don't know who your frontline manager is, but I think it's an awesome learning experience and life experience that they can really, whoever the person is, he or she can take from what happened. Cause it really, life goes on. It's all about what happens on the day to day. You make your plans for the long term, but how are you acquitting yourself every day? You know, you use the metaphor of blocking and tackling of being a manager. That's all it is. That's all everything is. It's just get a little bit better each day. Yeah. And it's really cool that that's sort of what you're proud of and what you feel like you've earned this year. That's really kind of cool.
Sweet. So what are your Thanksgiving plans there, Justin? I saw that's the next thing on the agenda.
I thought you'd have more to say. I was prompting you, but okay. For me personally, my fiance's still in California. My plan when I moved out here was to go out there for both the holidays, right? So I moved out here before this all happened, right? There were rumors, there blah, 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 blah. Oh, there's a flu, there's a virus. So I was like, okay, whatever. I'll just move there, and then for the first year, we'll fly back there together. And I was honestly like, even if I fly back there every year to spend the holidays with your family, I'm still saving money living in Florida. But I have an entire week off, right? School is closed for the week. I cannot think of anything worse than going to California and having nothing to do for a week except sit essentially in her room with her for a week, especially while she's working. So I've decided I was just going to stay here. That was what I've decided. I've decided just to stay in Florida. But then my cousin has a place down in Naples, and he texted me and he's like, what are you doing? Why don't you come down to Naples and spend Thanksgiving with us? And I was like, oh, okay. And he just, you know, completely just invited me of his own volition. And what we were just talking about, that's something to be thankful for. You know, I'm fortunate that I'm in this place, that I put myself in this place, but I'm thankful that he was able to, you know, I'm willing to invite me and that I'm able to do that and have somewhere to go for the week rather than just spending it alone. Because I would have spent it alone. I would have been completely content to spend it alone, especially with everything that's going on. Is that weird, William, that I would have been completely okay spending it alone? Spending Thanksgiving alone?
No, not at all. Not at all. You've got your most of your values already consolidated there in Florida, so it makes a lot of sense.
Yeah. And I guess it would have been me and my cat, so I don't know. I was looking for I was going to be the old person route. I was looking for buffets around here to go to. There's actually a really great restaurant in Disney World. I didn't really want to pay the price to get back in, but if you ever get a chance, go to Liberty Tree Tavern. Liberty Tree Tavern essentially has, it's for $60, it's all you can eat. It's pot roast, turkey, stuffing, mashed potatoes. So it's essentially a Thanksgiving meal. It's year-round they serve that meal, but it's essentially a Thanksgiving meal. I was seriously considering doing that if I couldn't find, like, a good buffet. I just didn't want to pay the ticket to get in, and then the ticket to get in the park, and then the $60 to eat again. So this is, you know, this is much better for me, and a buffet would have been much better, but I would have been completely satisfied. Like, I don't know if it's the culture we've been in for so long, but just, like, if things don't work out, like, and I mean that in any capacity in life, right? Like, even if my job falls through, I'm completely fine just dealing with things alone. And I don't know what that says about me or what that says about the culture, but with the way 2020 has been, that's what I would have done. But things are better for me. What about you? Are you spending it with a lot of people?
Especially California. My lawyers won't say, well, let me say the number of people, but yeah, there'll be deep fried turkey here. And,
are you seriously afraid of saying the number of people on the podcast?
but we'll be joined throughout the weekend.
Well, you are Dr. Drewing me so hard right now.
And I've got a full menu all planned out. I'm hoping someone will bring some deviled eggs. That's the only thing I don't have already going. But yeah, I've got all the sides. I got the stuff to make cornbread, even though, you know, I don't go crazy with the with the carbs anymore. It's a holiday, so I'm making some gluten-free cornbread and got the buttermilk, and yeah, it's gonna be great, man. I'm gonna be I know after the last couple episodes when we talked about alcohol, I'll be drinking some bourbon and deep frying some turkey, so enjoying some fine cocktails and then enjoying some delicious meat that's really only really has come to stand for the holiday around here for me and my friends and family. So I'm really looking forward to that.
How much alcohol are you going to drink though? How much bourbon?
Over the course of the weekend, there will probably be, let's see, probably between 8 and 10, various, bourbon cocktails, over the 4-day weekend. So,
okay. So that's very non-specific as far as the alcohol consumption level, right? Because that could have any, I mean, you could mix that any way you wanted, right? Or you could just drink it straight up, and who knows? Well, you said a cocktail, so you could mix it any way you wanted, and who knows how full the glass is. So,
well, they're tumblers, so they're it's not like you're pouring bourbon into a milk glass. So
a tumbler is like the glass Don Draper would drink from, correct?
Yes.
Right. Okay, so that gives us an idea. But for you personally, how intoxicated would that make you, 8 to 10 of those
over four days?
Not
very much at all. That's like,
okay, so that's like, different, right? That's not alcoholism. That's just enjoying the taste of it, right? That would be like if I had ice cream every day for 4 days, right?
Exactly. And only because it's Thanksgiving.
Right. Well, exactly. And see, that's not what I mean when I say accepted alcoholism. So I just want to be clear.
There will be no shots. That's true. There will be no shots or shots checkers. That was very common in college, when I was in college.
Nobody's going to be wearing a shirt that's a group shirt that says, let's get basted.
No one's going to be doing it. Or if they will, it might mean something a little different. It might.
Well, I don't know if I want to know about that. I didn't know it was that kind of party. So maybe that's why you don't want to know. Which raises a question. Are orgies strictly forbidden under California's new laws for new regulations? I don't even want to say laws.
I don't know. I that's a good question. I'll have to ask around and see where the orgy is, Justin. I'll get my crack research team on it. I'm sure I'm sure it's still going on. I mean, like, it's been so long that you know people are just getting exactly right back into Tinder or whatever, right?
They get back into everything. I'm sure people are going to have large gatherings. I mean, I know your gathering is like 100 people. I can just hear it in what you're saying.
But it's that's the entire block. We're closing off the block. That way we can be outside.
I mean, you might as well at this point, right? I mean, just put a middle finger in the air to Gavin Newsom. And because that's really why I brought this topic up. Because I am just to the point, William, I've just had it with all of this stuff. And I had a moment, right? We record these episodes on Sundays, and I had a moment on Saturday, especially because of something you made me listen to, primed me to have this moment, okay? So I'm not as in the know, in the immediacy of the know with my football teams anymore because I'm teaching and I'm coaching and everything, so I don't have as much time to be as plugged in as normal. You know, when you're working a state job in California or all the shitty jobs I worked before, even when you're on set as a PA, there's enough downtime that you can just get the news immediately, right? I can't do that anymore. I can't be on my phone. I can't be on the computer, especially when I'm teaching. It's a little easier in digital classes, but even then, I have to be responding to the students over and over again, and when I'm actually getting them to be more active, I have to be more active. So Saturday morning, I plan my wake-up time and I plan my morning activities so I can be ready to watch the Clemson game at noon. I sign into the ESPN app on my Roku at 11:55 a.m. And I start clicking around at the upcoming games and I can't find Clemson at FSU. And there's a short video. I find a short video that's about a minute long. It says Clemson FSU game postponed. So I watched the video, and apparently the game was postponed that morning because the FSU medical team and the Clemson medical team couldn't agree about the procedures to handle COVID, so they just postponed the game. I find out, apparently they tested a player the day before, and his test came back positive that morning, a Clemson player, and that's why the game was canceled, because FSU, I say canceled, it's de facto canceled. I don't expect the game to ever be played. The game, because of that player, was postponed because he tested positive. And William, I just think this is to the point of complete fucking irrationality. We've gone off the fucking deep end with this, dude. Like, one person tests positive for this disease, this virus. I don't even want to say disease. This virus that has a 99.7 survival rate, and the median age of death is like in the mid-70s to mid-80s. I listened, William. I listened to that Trigonometry podcast you wanted me to listen to. Maybe you can tell people what number it is and everything. And I'm not even going to lie to you. I'm not exaggerating. It brought tears to my eyes. I wasn't like bawling, but my eyes welled up at certain points because of how tragic it is that we're buying into all of this.
Yeah, I'm looking up the episode now. I'll repost it on the Discord. But amazing.
I'll link to it. I'm going to link to the episode. I'm also going to link to an article from England where even I think it's Daily Mail has this great article about all the stats and everything in England and about how another lockdown for them doesn't make sense. So even England is rebelling against their authoritarian government. It's crazy. Yeah. So I'll link to all those things.
Yeah, it's hard. I mean, if you remember at the beginning of the pandemic, we had some of our longtime listeners leave the show because we were reporting stuff like this out. And now, like, it's coming home to roost. And, you know, there's certain people that I follow that they're going to have to, you know, their tweets are forever, right? Like, this reckoning is going to come. Reality is coming, right? And these questions, even the fact that the questioning is being so belligerently fought against, is the thing that will endure, right? That's the blemish that will endure, right? Not being wrong, right? But the refusal to explain, right? The refusal to engage, the refusal to look at reality, right? That's something that you, like, is just laid to bear for a lot of people. And it is currently having disastrous consequences.
Well, yeah, and that's the thing that is most upsetting to me personally about all this, because the number one thing I am over the most about all of this, William, and I swear to God to you, I'm going to get in trouble. I am going to get in trouble. I might even say some stuff right now that if somehow someone happens to listen to this, I'm going to get in trouble for. I am so over masks. And it's a perfect example of exactly what you just talked about. 100% what you just talked about. Listen to that episode of Trigonometry. Listen to it. Read the articles. Masks do nothing. They're completely the TSA. They're completely theater to make it feel like we are doing something to protect other people. It's so when people look at us, they can say, oh, that person cares. That person's doing something to protect himself and others against the virus. That's all it is. It's 100% concrete, because all the other measures to be taken, including taking a vaccine, are unseen. Do you understand what I mean by that, William, that they're unseen, including taking a vaccine?
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
Nobody else can see that you do them. There's no way of showing other people that you're responding to this. But wearing a mask, they can. Right? So we wear these things not to actually protect people physically, biologically, right? We're not actually protecting people from getting sick. We're protecting people psychologically. This is all emotional.
But are we even protecting them, right? What we're doing is we're feeding into the irrationality, right?
Oh, 100%. Yeah. 100%.
We're not protecting them. Yeah, yeah.
In reality, it's what Adam Carolla always talks about, right? The hand sanitizer, the overshowering, the wearing masks. What this is doing is distancing us from germs and making us more vulnerable in the long run. And as I just said, the masks aren't actually distancing us. What it's doing is it's distancing ourselves from emotional toughness. We're not developing that tough emotional skin of being able to deal with something. I mean, I could tell you this firsthand at school. There are teachers who are still like freaking out and stressed out over the pandemic. And they're like, I can't handle this. It's too stressful to teach during this. I'm like, why? It's the same thing. It's a normal day. You show up, you teach them. The kids are online or they're not. Yeah, online's a little annoying because they don't always respond. Right, they're sitting there, and I just send them the picture of Cartman from the pandemic special episode of South Park now when they're not responding, where he just put up a picture of himself to make it look like he was there, and I go, guys, this is what you're doing to me right now. This is how I picture all of you. And then they all laugh, because they don't realize, a lot of them, some of them are doing that, but others don't realize that if a teacher can't see what you're doing, you need to respond to them verbally or in text somehow to show you're working. I can walk around the room in person and see you're working, even if you're not talking, but it doesn't work that way online. So they all act like, all these teachers act like they're all stressed out over this. That's what we're doing, William. We're not making anyone emotionally tough anymore. We're coddling everyone. And that's what it is with these masks. And I'm so sick of it to the point that I cut corners now. I completely cut corners.
The corners of your mask?
Basically, I should start doing that. I mean, I'll give you a couple instances. So if it's my planning period or my lunch period and I walk down the hall and there's no one in the hall, I won't have a mask on. I'm not going to put it on. Why am I going to put it on? There's no one around. Even if there is no one around, I mean, even if there is someone around, it's not going to do anything to protect them. I don't put a mask on. There's no point. Likewise, I was standing outside watching the varsity girls soccer game on Friday night. I didn't have a mask on. Other people saw me. They talked to me. Nobody said anything to me. Nobody really cares anymore. It's only we're worried about what, the Karens, right? And that's the real issue here. And then the other day, Elliot used to be a host on this show. We went around to look at all the Disney hotels. If you follow me on Instagram, you can see that I put up pictures of like the Grand Floridian, their decorations for Christmas. Well, at one point we were sitting in the back of the bus at Disney, and when you're on the Disney property, you're supposed to have the mask on. But I looked at the front. There's no one up there. There's no way anyone could have seen. The entire bus ride we took to one of the resorts, I didn't have my mask on. What's the worst thing they're going to do to me? Unless they have like 6 warnings on file for me, they're just going to tell me to put it back on. Right, William?
Yeah, yeah.
Right, so I don't care anymore.
Well, they're required by law to say that to you, right? I don't know how it is in California. In California, I'm required by law to ask someone wear a mask or leave.
And, but this is what I found
And then
out.
I have to call, I'm supposed to call the police. And I've had to. I was in the store the other day. Some, what are we, we're not supposed to call them homeless, or are we supposed to call them now? I don't know.
Unsheltered.
Shelter, unsheltered. There we go. I knew it was someone unsheltered. An unsheltered person came in, not wearing a mask, holding a cup they picked out of the garbage, I'm assuming, asking if they could fill it with water. I said, no, I'm sorry. It's unsanitary. Swore at me and then thankfully left. Like, but I'm supposed to tell them to leave, right? And, oh, sorry. I said, that's unsanitary and you have to leave because you don't have a mask. And they swore
at me. You didn't say because of the cup. The cup, I get the cup, right? I get the cup.
Well, the cup's also unsanitary. But
happens to you? What happens to you, William, if you don't say something to him?
Then I can lose my health license.
That's insane. That is insane. Because I learned something, and this is another reason I'm glad to be in Florida. So I was reading about this, because in one of my classes I had them, you know, I wanted them to practice writing, so I had them write an argumentative like paragraph about how long should we wear masks for, and I said, you know, pick a claim, give a definitive claim, a specific concrete claim, and back it up with evidence. So they were asking me questions, so I looked it up. DeSantis, the governor here, like last month, October, did it pass an executive order. I didn't realize there was a clause in that executive order. Are you ready for this clause, William?
I'm ready.
The clause is that you can't be fined or punished for not wearing a mask.
Wow. That's very different than California.
The governor essentially rendered the local ordinances moot. Now, private companies can throw you off their property, right? Because that's a contract between you and them. And if Disney wants to say if you're on property, you have to leave.
And
I understand
that.
And
I'm all for that. The problem I have is that I don't get to set the room. I don't get to set the rules in my own restaurant, right?
Correct. Correct.
In fact,
I am for them.
I'm still trying
to
figure out how exactly we're supposed to rearrange our deck furniture under the new curfew law here in California. Like, there's something about different percentage of capacity and feet away from each other. This is outdoors, like completely outdoors. I'll have to send you a picture, Justin, of our outdoor area. It's literally just like a very nicely tiled, large, very, very large area outside of the restaurant, like on the corner of Long Beach Boulevard and First Street, right? Like, it's completely wide open. You know, above you is 60 stories of sky, right? But I don't know exactly how we're supposed to be arranging the tables now, because they just changed the rules again, starting, I think, Friday at 10 p.m.
Oh, we have right, and that's your own establishment.
Yeah, yeah.
Right. So I'm not for any company having these mask mandates, but I'm for if they want to be irrational, that's up to them, right?
Exactly.
And I understand a lot of these companies like Disney are right. And I understand a lot of them are doing it because they don't want to be sued, right? Disney's afraid of being sued.
You don't want to be sued. And also, there's the customers are segmented, right? And people are more likely to say, I'll don a mask and go in here than the other way around, right? So they're caught
in a dilemma,
right?
What you just said, William, that is the real thing at stake here. And when you're talking about the long-term lasting effects, that's the real thing at stake here. Because let's be honest. Let's take Disney as the example. I was having this conversation with Elliot. You're right. I agree that people are just like, fuck it. I'll put the mask on and go in. And also, as Elliot said, they're respecting the wishes of the company, right? It's their company. They own it. They're respected. I get that. But if literally everyone or 90% of people or even 80% of people said, you know what? They have a mask mandate. I'm just not going to go until the mask mandate's gone. What would Disney do?
Well, I'm assuming they would have to change their mask mandate, right? Because if they want the customer, it's what the customer wants.
Right, they would get rid of it. So this is the crazy thing about all of this, right? Because you listened to that episode, right? What stood out to you about that trigonometry episode that you wanted people to listen to it?
I think having someone rationally lay out the facts and, you know, Alex Epstein talks about all the time. When you're looking for an expert, there's a certain way that they talk, that they present their argument that even if, you know, even if they may be wrong on certain things, you can sort of understand them and listen to them, right? Because they point out their own weaknesses in their arguments. They lay things out where it's strong. They steel man the opposition, those sort of things, right? And this guy seems like super, like he hits all those bars, right? He's super genuinely interested in people's lives, right? And he's putting it in those terms, and he's talking about consequences and things where things are fuzzy, but steel manning the argument for lockdowns, but then pointing out how it's wrong and it didn't work and how it doesn't work, and then talking about the infection rates and the statistics and the average age and all these things that no one talks about, right? No one engages with. I mean, he's just a virus denier, right? And this pattern is something we see so often, right? That we should be, this should be something that we are taught to look for. When you find experts that talk like this, you should listen, not as in like listen and agree. You should listen and consider and use that as things that you need to deal with rationally in order to hold position on what action should be taken. I don't know. What was your key takeaway, Justin?
I think what you said is great. I think what you said is great. And the way I would conceptualize that is just context. And what I mean by that is, you said he was talking about the actual effects on people's lives. Am I correct?
Yeah. Yeah. He was looking at the actual consequences. What really happened? Look at the data, right?
Right. What did happen and what could happen and what will happen is what he was looking at. And exactly. One of the things I've hated about the discussion about all of this, this whole year, this whole pandemic, is this idea that, oh, virologists, epidemiologists, they're only looking at it from a medical standpoint. Doctors are only looking at it from a medical standpoint. So the only consequences they can understand are the medical ones. Really? They can't understand the economic consequences of shutting the entire economy down? They're that fucking stupid? And that's the thing I liked about this guy, is he was able to say, well, no, I get what they want and what the consequences would be, and I get what they would want what the consequences would be, and therefore, based on both of those, I can assess which one I think is better. And he was able to look at the broader picture, and he wasn't allowing his niche, his specialized expertise to overtake his general perspective on the world. And you couch that in, and he was looking at man's life, right? People's lives and what the effects, what the right consequences on people's lives will be. And I thought that's what was great about it, because the whole conversation has been, well, of course economists are going to say this, and of course doctors are going to say this, and of course they're going to disagree. It's like, you really think a truly intelligent economist is incapable of understanding the medical consequences? And you really think a truly intelligent doctor is incapable of understanding the economic consequences? So I that's what I thought made it good, because, as you said, he's steel manned. He's steel manned because he understood all of it. He understood all of it, and he was able to look at it and say, no, this is what makes the most sense. And he was very realistic about it. And the realism about it was, we are not really ever going to eradicate this virus, right? The idea that suddenly we're going to have a vaccine for coronavirus, which the common cold is coronavirus, and we've never had a vaccine for that ever? That's crazy to me that we suddenly think we're going to have a vaccine. But based upon what he was saying, to me, what you hit on that is so key about all of this is the idea that you can't speak out about masks without being called an anti-masker.
Right.
Oh, you're just anti-mask. Well, yes, I am anti-mask, but what matters is why I'm anti-mask. Right? I'm not anti-mask like if it was the Black Plague. I mean, I said this to Daniel on the phone the other day. Right? William.
Yeah.
Look on your local level. This is Midsiders. This is what I want everyone to do this week, Thanksgiving. Look on your local level. And I mean very much your local level. Look at the people around you. Look at your immediate circle and look beyond that. Look at your city. Look at your state. Go for a walk. Go to Walmart. I mean, if you're near a place like Disney, go to a mall. Go to some sort of an amusement area. Go to these places. And I want you to see if there are sick people. And I want you to see what it's like. And the reason I'm saying this is, in the history of the world, there have been plagues. The Black Death, there were people literally dying in the street. But you listen to these conversations where, oh, you're an anti-masker, blah, blah, blah. Anti-masker. And it sounds like the world's ending. But you go outside and you look at reality, and it's not. And we're not speaking into a vacuum here, William. I know a good friend who him and his kids and his mother-in-law and his wife had it, a mid-sider, right? My fiance worked, she just resigned because it's spreading where she works. She worked in a retirement home, and she's, you know, she's coming here at end of December, early January, so why take a leave of absence and then just quit right away? So she just quit because, you know, her grandmother lives at home with her. But old people who live there have died. Elderly people got it and died in a few days because they were very, very old. She worked in the area with the patients with dementia, so they died very quickly. And coworkers she knew got it, tested positive for it. I've had other midsiders besides my good friend and his family tell me recently members of their family had it. So we're not speaking into a vacuum of never hearing anyone had it. But William, when you go outside and when you talk to people and when you hear about these things, do you hear anyone where this is like a debilitating thing, like the Black Death, where everyone's dying and the world's ending?
No. In fact, I think there's a slow trickle, I think, of realization that irreplaceable moments have been lost. And it's sad because some of those irreplaceable moments are the people that are gone because of the virus, right? But now, for some people, this is starting, the irreplaceable moments are gone not because of anyone passing, but because of the way that we have shut ourselves in. Does that make sense? Like we've made it so that those irreplaceable moments are gone. I think that's why you see people having this gut reaction against all these, you know, so-called Thanksgiving restrictions, right? People are just like, fuck no, right? I've seen pictures of people in the airport. People are traveling, right? Like this is an irreplaceable moment to people. They're willing to, quote-unquote, take a risk, right?
Because Thanksgiving and Christmas, William, are the embodiment of the irreplaceable moments. You know, to you and me, who we really value life, right? Especially because we're atheists and, you know, we're all about living life on Earth and being happy now. We really value the day to day, right? To me, if like I'm not happy every day, I need to make a change.
Yeah.
Exactly. Like I Newfound Glory, they have that lyric, right? Living for the weekend state of mind, right? That I saw in Party on Apocalypse, where they're talking about makes no sense. That's always been me. Right, there was a Dashboard Confessional lyric back in the day about people live for the weekends, but I let my weeks bleed right into them. And that always resonated with me because I never understood this idea that there's 7 days of the week and you're living for two of them. That makes no fucking sense to me. That means 5/7 of your life you're trying to get around. That's insane to me. That's insane. So, you know, we have that. But for everybody else, you know, for the majority of people, Thanksgiving and Christmas, like, those are the moments, like, they don't want to forget. And, you know, when it was Halloween, it was a funny joke because it's like, okay, the kids can't get out and get free candy because it's fucking candy, right? If you really want candy for your kids, you can go afford it, right? It's not like it's expensive to buy this manufactured processed sugar. So we're like, haha, that's funny. But now we're starting to look at and seeing Thanksgiving and Christmas, which are big deals in this country still. Big deals in this culture, as much as they try to undermine people, some people try to undermine those things. They're big deals. So people look at that and they go, wait a minute, they're serious about this? They actually are serious about taking this away from us? And it's even with the old people, the elderly, William, I have an example for you. My grandmother is 91 years old. She had cancer in the bottom of her foot. They took it out. You know what? It came back. She's on hospice now. That means she doesn't have long to live. But you know how long or how difficult it is for my mother to go and see her? And I'm not particularly close with my grandmother. My mom is, though. That's her mother. And she, over the past year, which is essentially the last year of my grandmother's life, right? She's 91. She has cancer. It's all over her body now. She's on hospice. For the last year of her life, you know how difficult it's been for my mom to see my grandmother? So on one hand, we say we're protecting the most vulnerable, but what are we protecting them from? The virus? When, not to be callous, but their life was at the rear end of it anyway. So were we really just taking away their end of life benevolence? Weren't we taking away the ability for them to have the end of life they wanted? Now they have to have their end of life completely, completely, completely on their own. My grandmother is 91. She lives alone. Her husband, my grandfather, died in, what, 2007? So what, that's 13 years ago? Mm. She's been living alone since then, but she lived down the street from my mom. So my mom would help her and see her all the time. But now she's alone. So what are we actually doing for these people who are vulnerable? You know, the tragic ones are the ones who are in their 40s, their 50s, their 30s, who have something fucking crazy happen. But those are such absurd outliers. But we've made it this way because we've made it socially untenable to speak out against this. And this is the number one thing I think we have to deal with as a culture, William. And this is what I want to get your thoughts on. It seems to me that the left have figured out how to make their positions the socially acceptable ones and to make speaking out against them socially unacceptable. And because of it, it makes it easier for them to sneak their things in. Do you understand what I mean by that? I'm talking about, like, you can't say you're anti-masks, even though that's the reality position.
Yeah.
That is the position that's in line with reality, that masks don't do anything. But you can't say that because they've made it socially that even among people who agree, I can't tell you the number of people I come across that agree with me. Even among people who agree, you have to whisper to each other. To me, that is the biggest danger in our society. And how did they do that? How did they do that, William?
Well, I don't think they did it. I think this gets back to something we talked about before with social justice and sort of the pretzel logic that keeps them disconnected from reality, right? Keeps the attack on epistemology in general, right? Saying it's more than just all ideas are relative. It's that your ideas are evil, right? Any idea that's not in this, it's a religious thing. Any ideas that aren't part of the catechism is evil. It's heresy. It's profane, right? And this concept of profanity and shame that is completely, it just takes it out of the realm of the rational and it insulates it from any rational attack. And that's fine, right? Because I don't mean that's fine as in that's good. I just mean that's fine. That just means that we need to arm ourselves with the ability to dismiss it as irrational, right? There's no need to engage in that, right? There's no way to engage it. The only answer to it is nothing, right? If you're not going to agree to look at reality, then there's nothing for us to talk about.
Right. And I think that's the big thing. I think that's the big thing. I agree with everything you said. I think that it's been made fundamentally socially unacceptable to just dismiss some people. I like to say that back in the day, right, before I was even alive, I feel like you could dismiss people. You could be like, oh, that guy's the town drunk. He's the town crazy. But now everyone's considered equal, so you can't dismiss them, especially because they get louder and louder.
Well, and let's draw a distinction though, because someone who that's what they're doing when they say, well, you're just an anti-masker, right? They're dismissing you. But there's a difference. The difference is, again, epistemological. The difference is, I can say, hey, if you don't, I'm making it conditional, right? I'm saying, hey, if you don't want to look at actual reality and you don't believe in objective facts and you don't want to deal with reality, then I don't think we can talk. But if you do, I want to engage, right? But they say, well, if you don't hold this belief, then you are racist, therefore you should be dismissed. And not just dismissed, but silenced and erased, right? That's the difference. And I want to make sure that difference is clear, right? Because it's not just that you're just saying, fuck you, although that's appropriate at times. It's that you're saying, hey, if you're not if you're not going to look at reality, if reality is not the thing we're discussing, if there are no objective facts, if, you know, data is just a white concept, right? Science is just a white concept, then we have no common ground to engage in rationality because you've rejected rationality.
And I think that what you just said is the key thing, is when they're dismissing, they're saying, we're going to ruin your life and make you a non-entity in the most aggressive way possible. Perhaps we don't have to be that way back, but I think what you just said is the way it needs to be handled. It needs to be, oh, you won't engage with reality at all? Then you are a non-entity to me.
Reality,
and
the way I would put it is, if you're not going to deal with reality, then reality is going to deal with you, and I need to put distance between me and you, because I know what that
right. means. Right, and that's what I mean by non-entity. I mean, hey, you don't exist to me anymore, because
you're a danger sign. See, I'm trying to add to what you're saying. I'm saying you're a danger sign, right? Your ruin is coming down upon you, and I need to make sure that I'm well insulated against that.
Okay, yeah, I see. Yeah, that's a better way of framing it rhetorically. I was trying to say, like, oh, hey, you're a danger, so I'm going to act like you don't exist anymore. But you're right, it's like, you're a danger, so it's like, you're radioactive, so I need to put distance between me and you right now. Like, holy crap, yeah, you do exist, and you're scary. Where you're just trying to say, oh, you're dangerous to me, so I need to cancel you because you're dangerous to me. It's the same thing, and that's the way it needs to be. But the difference is we're not trying to punish them where they're trying to punish us.
Exactly.
And I think that's what it is, William. I think people don't want to say things because they're afraid of dealing with the crazy people who are going to try and punish them rather than treating them. Because our perspective, you have to do two things. One, you have to realize that their ranting and raving is ultimately ineffective.
Right.
And then you have to act like they're radioactive and get away from them. And the first thing can be hard to do because instinctively, as social creatures, if someone's screaming in your face and telling you how terrible you are, it's hard not to have that immediate emotional reaction and go, wow, I really am terrible. Or other people are going to think I'm terrible. I mean, hasn't this been used by high school kids since the beginning of time? High school girls, like if you break up with a high school girl, she just starts rumors about you or something, even if they're not true.
Yeah, there's also a tiny bit in some people's cases of Dagny's error, right? Where you're assuming these people want to live, right? Some people just want to rule or be ruled, right? They don't want to live.
Right. Well, right. I think it's ultimately they don't realize they don't want to live. I think that's one thing that when people read Rand's writing, they don't realize she's, you know, romanticizing it, mythologizing it in that way, where she's making real things that people don't realize themselves psychologically. You know, yeah. I think the character of James Taggart in Atlas Shrugged embodies that. Right? He doesn't realize that he's a destroyer until the end of the novel. He thinks he's doing good. But at the end of the novel, he realizes he's a destroyer. Most people don't get that far. Most people, it's like you said, they want to be ruled because they think that's their way to happiness. But they don't conceptualize it as, oh, hey, I want to be ruled. They conceptualize it as, oh, this is the only way I can have a good life. And people misconstrue that. All right. Well, I mean, to sum it up, dude, I'm an anti-masker. I'm not afraid to say it anymore. Like,
oh, man.
Before I was kind of not an anti-masker. I was like, whatever, I'll do what you need when you need it. But here's my question. This is what I want to know legally. If the governor has made it so any government cannot enforce a mask thing, right? They cannot fine you. They cannot punish you. Can the school actually do anything if I don't wear a mask?
Well, they are your employer, so... It's part of
that's where
employment.
It gets. That's where the line gets blurry, right? Because their argument is, if you don't wear a mask and someone near you is exposed, we can ask you to quarantine. But I don't know if that's legal based on that stat. I don't know. If there's any lawyers out there who listen to this show, maybe reach out to me so we can figure out the fine print of this. Because I'm kind of to the point of like I'm willing to do some civil disobedience here to prove a point. Because so this is the thing, William. Final question before we move on to the hopeful romantic. This has to start somewhere, right? Somebody has to be the first person, right? Because our entire culture, Our entire way of life is at stake here. So somebody has to be the first person. And it's at a certain point, don't we have to ask the question, why not me?
Yeah, I think so. And I don't know that it really just depends on your values, right? For particular people. But even if it's not you, you being there to support the person that does do it. Does that make sense?
Right? Oh, like I support anyone who does.
Yeah. We have these,
any of you out there,
the
if you do anything,
basically.
And you, right. If you do anything and you get in trouble, the Midside is on your side. I want to say that 100%. I have to decide if it's right for me to do, but if that happens, I'm on your side. We've been on your side this whole time. So I want to be clear about that. I agree with you. So yeah, anyone out there, if there's any lawyers or anything, get in touch with me. Let me know what's going on. Let me figure this thing out. Because I'm of the mind that they can't really do anything to me. I just want to know if they can force me to quarantine. That's what I want to know. That's all I want to know.
Well, if they do, Snyder has some advice for you.
And go ahead and flex that bicep there, Justin.
And then that'll be the end of that.
That wasn't Snyder saying that, though. That was Dave.
Okay.
That
so
was
the joke
Pena.
Didn't work.
Well, I want to be clear. Snyder did not tell me to flex. That was Dave. So,
all right.
Speaking of Snyder and romantic art, let's talk about some art in The Hopeful Romantic with JML.
Put me into syndication. Broadcast to a network station of people viewing their favorite episodes. I can't find a new pitch to throw the studio. Focused on.
If you would like to continue this conversation during the week, you can do so by joining our Discord. All you have to do is go to themidside.com or themidside.com/podcast, click on any episode, and there is a link in there to join our Discord. I would really appreciate it. It's a great way of you contributing to the show. You know, you tell us what you want to talk about. But also, we have some great conversations in there. I feel like Discord, William, has been getting a lot better over this past year. I think 2020 has been a great year for our Discord channel. What do you think?
Yeah, we've had some great conversations. A lot of new folks showing up, especially in the last couple weeks. And people post links. We share videos. We have discussions on things. It really helps with the show prep, helps us pick topics that you guys care about. People give us feedback, which is always great, so we can improve the show. It's a great place.
Yeah, and some of the new people who've joined in the last few weeks have added some great ideas in there and great information. It's just enjoyable conversation. Even beyond what William's saying about the benefits for the show, it's just enjoyable conversation, which there's not a lot of online right now. So I want to do a couple quick reviews, not long reviews, because I don't think there was anything I really watched this week that was like intellectually substantive. I didn't go to the movies. I didn't go to the theaters. The one movie in theaters that I would want to see is Let Him Go, which is the Pod Ma Kent movie. If anyone knows to talk about Kevin Costner and Diane Lane, it looks interesting. Timing wise, I wasn't able to get to the movies before we recorded this episode because of my schedule and everything I had going on. So instead, I watched a bunch of stuff online. So on streaming services. So the first thing I watched was I caught up on DuckTales. We've talked about the new DuckTales before on this show, and they had a double episode, William. I don't know if you're caught up on the show. They had a double episode called Let's Get Dangerous, which was essentially a Darkwing Duck episode. It wasn't really a DuckTales episode.
Yeah.
And I can't say, did you see it?
I did. I watched it this morning, kind of like the old Saturday morning cartoons. I got up while I was making breakfast and had it on my computer, and I was watching to it and listening to it.
I'm going to ask you, how happy did it make you that there was a Darkwing Duck episode, a 44-minute Darkwing Duck episode in the year 2020, and the fact that that Darkwing Duck is officially part of the DuckTales universe now rather than like a weird spinoff?
Yeah, it's great. I couldn't get over the they handled the comedy so well, right? And seeing the old villains, minor spoiler there, seeing the old villains in action was cool. And even the way that they sort of like solved the puzzle felt very integrated with the theme. And then giving that a continuation, like there's obviously some more veins of story they can present there that are would contribute to the Darkwing Duck lore without it, you know, it sort of escapes any sort of problems with like having that those two sort of universes combined.
Yeah, and the actual problem itself involved like parallel universes and stuff, so it was like a super sci-fi plot. And I was like, wow, this is really, really cool. And in general, with DuckTales, William, I've been sort of waiting for the other shoe to drop. And what I mean by that, in this age of rebooting things and turning them into social justice, I've been waiting for them to undermine the values of the original DuckTales. You know, DuckTales is a very, very traditionally American show. And I mean that in like the truest sense of the American founding. And I've been waiting for them to undermine that. There was sort of one episode, I think it was last season, that sort of flirted with that, where Louis took over Scrooge's curse or whatever. And because of that, Louis had to learn the value of hard work and everything. And they sort of, I don't remember exactly, but they flirted with that edge. But that's the closest they've come. I mean, there wasn't even an episode this season where they made the inflation point. There was an episode in the original series which was all about inflation and why it's bad. And Huey had a line in an episode this season about why inflation's bad. And I was like, wow, that's pretty impressive for writers rebooting a show from the 80s in the year 2020. And that's pretty cool.
Yeah, I agree. If you haven't watched the new DuckTales, you can find, I don't know if all of the episodes, but I know some of the episodes are available on YouTube. So if you don't have Disney Plus, you can catch them there, but they're definitely worth it. If you have Verizon, you got your free Disney Plus, just go watch that. It's that and Mandalorian, I think, are the only two shows worth watching on Disney Plus. I could stand corrected, but those are the two that are actually worth it.
Seasons 1 and 2 are on the Disney Plus app. Season 3 of DuckTales, which is airing now, is on the Disney Now app, which you can log into with your TV provider online login.
Cool.
Another thing I want to review very, very quickly, because it's a don't watch, is the movie Knock Knock, by Eli Roth. It stars Keanu Reeves and Ana de Armas. This movie came out in 2015. I watched it because I'm a big Keanu Reeves fan, and it was popular on Netflix. So I was like, okay, I can review this for the podcast. This is literally one of the worst movies I've ever seen, and I say that in all seriousness. First of all, this is in that stage of Keanu Reeves' career where we forgot how good he is. This was kind of like in the Nicolas Cage stage of his career. I read one review that they compared it to. Remember, do you know the meme, William, of Nicolas Cage and the Wicker Man where he's like, not the bees?
Yeah, I remember that meme.
Yeah, it's sort of like this where Keanu Reeves, like, if you've ever wanted to see Keanu Reeves star in softcore porn or yell calling women bitches and cunts, watch this movie. So this movie is Keanu Reeves is like this architect who he's 43, he's in love with his wife, he's got two young kids and his Father's Day, but he has a project to do, so his family goes away for the weekend, his two kids, his wife go away for the weekend, and he stays home. And these two young girls show up at his house, and it's raining, and they ask him, you know, oh, do you know where the so-and-so house is? We're supposed to go to a party there. And he doesn't, but he lets them in, and then he tries to let them use the phone, and then the whole situation degenerates. And William, this sounds like a porn premise, right?
Yeah, it does.
Right. And that's what it degenerates into. So the movie's about like an hour and a half long, an hour 45. And for the first like 50 minutes, it's like all this setup of like how he ends up sleeping with these two girls. And then the next morning he wakes up and they've turned his kitchen into a mess. And, you know, they're trying to cook him food and everything. And then he tries to throw them out and they're like, oh, but, you know, we're underage. They're not really. They're just saying that. We're underage and, you know, we'll just call the police and tell them, if you call the police on us, we'll just tell them you're a pedophile and we'll get you as a sex offender. So then they basically, over the next 45 minutes, destroy his life. And then that's the end of the movie. he's buried in the sand up to his neck in the backyard, and his wife and his kids comes home, and his son is like, "Daddy had a party," and the movie ends. And I was like,
okay,
so there's no fucking point to this movie. Now, it's directed by Eli Roth, so of course maybe I should have expected that. But here's the kicker. Are you ready for this, William? Here's what's going to amaze you the most. This is a remake of a 1977 film. So somebody already did this movie.
Was it a porno?
No. It was an actual movie. So somebody made that crappy movie to begin with, and then Eli Roth decided it would be a good idea to remake it with the help of the producers from the original movie. It's bizarre. I would never suggest watching this movie. This is one of the worst movies I've ever seen. So let's talk about things you could possibly see. Every week I post the trailers for Trailer Takedown on the midside.com on Saturdays. I also put them in the link in the Discord channel. So if you're a member of Discord, you can watch the trailers then, or you can watch them after the episode and after we talk about them, or you can watch a trailer and then we talk about it. Watch a trailer and then we talk about it.
Trailer Takedown. First trailer.
Tom and Jerry is a Roger Rabbit-esque big screen reboot of the classic cartoon. I say Roger Rabbit-esque because it's a mix of live action and animation. I think that's really cool. I like that part of it. It stars Hit Girl, Chloe Grace Moretz, and Jerry goes to live in a hotel, it looks like, but they want to get rid of him, so they bring Tom in, and then it's all about Tom trying to catch Jerry, and then Hit Girl gets involved somehow, Chloe Grace Moretz gets involved. I don't know, this is very confusing to me. Maybe I'm not up on Tom and Jerry enough, but they seem to be making this more like the Roadrunner and Wile E. Coyote, where Jerry's outsmarting Tom, but I always thought it was sort of like Sylvester and Tweety. And what I mean by that is, it wasn't that that Jerry's outsmarting Tom, it's just sort of like Tom tries and ridiculous things happen to him. Whereas the Roadrunner, where it was kind of like he acts stupid, but he's smarter than he is. So this didn't feel like Tom and Jerry to me, but this also felt overly complicated. Like, why do we need this much of a premise for Tom and Jerry? Why do we need to do it in this way? Why do we need to overcomplicate this? Why can't we just make Tom and Jerry anymore? That's why DuckTales works. That's why the reboot works. They're like, we just made DuckTales. It's an adventuring family. It's a rich guy who values hard work and the money you earn from it, and he values his family. That's what it is.
Yeah.
They value adventuring. Why couldn't we have just done that with Tom and Jerry? Tackle.
Tackle.
Yeah, I agree with you on the animation. The animation looked interesting, although it's like super computerized, right? Like, you know, just trying to manage people's expectations. It's like completely digital, the animation, which is not a criticism. Just like, you know, Roger Rabbit, it was not, right? It was, I think it was all hand-drawn cell animation. That being said, if this was, Justin, my takeaway from this is confusion. Is this for kids, or is this complicated premise there to like bring in families? Right? Do you see what I'm saying? Like, what was this an attempt to make the story more complex? Like, you know, basically trying to Pixar it a bit and just didn't land in the trailer. I don't know. Either way, it seemed really confusing and I don't know. Why would I watch this? If I want to watch Tom and Jerry, I'll just watch Tom and Jerry. So, I'll tell you.
Tackle. Second trailer.
The Wilds is an Amazon original series that seems to be an all teenage girl version of Lord of the Flies. It seems to be these girls crash on an island and have to survive. Now, the first half of this trailer, I was like, oh my God, this is disgusting social justice nonsense. Why did we need to take Lord of the Flies and reboot it with women? And I'm even talking about all the lines and everything. Everything in there, it was like, social justice, women, teen girls have it so hard. Girls have it so hard. And I was like, oh my God, this is going to be terrible. But then the second half, like, it turned into almost like Lost. And what I mean by that, it's like, wait till the girls find out what's on the island. And then it seemed like the crash was manufactured. And I was like, hold up. these are like two different shows. I was like super interested in the second half. So for me, I will give this show a chance. I will see what the deal is with the show. I will see if I can stand the thematic elements, how much are in there and how much is just like that was lip service because they have to do that in the year 2020. But I like the rest of the premise. Is this manufactured? Were they forced to go there? What is the island really? Tentative hug.
Netflix and hug.
Amazon Prime and hug. But yeah, yeah,
exactly. We don't have Amazon Prime yet.
Charlie, take down Dan. Get on that.
All right. So, Justin, the problem for me was if they had changed the order of the preview, then maybe I'd be interested, right? But the social justice stuff, just like, I don't want to see social justice in space. I can watch Star Trek Disgracery if I want to watch that, right? So meaning like if I want to see social justice in sci-fi settings, like it's already been done horrifically, and my brain can't take that. If it was just the second half, I would have done this. Tackle.
Third trailer.
Godmothered is a comedy coming directly to Disney Plus, starring Jillian Bell and Isla Fisher. It sort of looks like it's taking the concept of... I got a cough here. Hold on. Sorry about that. That was my dry Corona cough. Everyone out there. It sort of looks like it's taking the premise of Enchanted and doing it again, where Jillian Bell is a godmother in training, and she has to go out in the world and help Isla Fisher, who doesn't believe in magic because the world doesn't believe in magic anymore. So Jillian Bell has to figure out a way to help her and use magic to help her, even though she's being very resistant towards it. And you know what? At the beginning of this trailer, I was like, this is going to be a stupid Disney movie. Like when they did, they made the Anna Kendrick movie where she becomes Santa Claus at the end of it on Disney Plus, which is just fucking stupid. But when I was watching this trailer, like, this is what a Disney movie for kids should be. This is, it has that Christmas movie feel to it, right? Where it should be like, hey, yeah, there's magic in the world and you can believe and your life can get better and good things can happen to you. And the way this was executed was in a very warm and benevolent way. And it made me, you know what? I'd be okay watching this. I'll probably end up watching this at some point. My fiance will probably want to watch this. And I think this would be enjoyable. So I will straight up hug this one.
Hug.
So when I watched this trailer, it seemed like something that you could, like, I could watch with my nephew or watch like in a, like with my family, if Thanksgiving and Christmas weren't canceled due to coronavirus. That being said, I don't think I would watch this on my own. And, I appreciated the themes, especially it seems like they're going to kind of explore this, like, getting rid of cynicism as the metaphor for the magic. And that seemed interesting, but I just don't think this would be something I would watch by myself. So I'm going to tackle it. It's a very light tackle.
Final trailer.
Chaos Walking stars Tom Holland and Daisy Ridley. In it, Daisy Ridley's spaceship crashes on a planet that is only filled with men. Except, apparently, all the women were killed or died because somehow this is related to the fact that all the men's thoughts can be heard. So it basically, when they think, it's like they're speaking. This is a super sci-fi movie. It reminds me of Why the Last Man. Did you ever read the comic book/graphic novel Why the Last Man, William?
No, I haven't.
Well, Why the Last Man, if you get a chance, you should read it. It's really cool. It's the idea that all the men die on Earth except with this one guy named Yorick and his pet monkey, Ampersand, who's also a male. So they're the only two males left on Earth. And it's like what society is like then and how do they deal with him when the women find him. It's a really cool story. They were supposed to adapt it with Shia LaBeouf, which he would have been great in that role. But this movie is sort of like that, except it's the reverse premise, right? She's the only woman. And I like the way visually this is done. This looks really cool. I like the way how when you can see the men thinking, like you can see Tom Holland thinking, there's like an aura around his head that moves like a sound wave and it's colored. And I like how it fits the plot. Or it fits what's going on, the plot mechanics. I think this has potential to be a really great sci-fi movie. So I am in for that. I'm very excited for this movie. Hug.
Hug.
So, you know, I thirst for good sci-fi. This premise seems really interesting. It looks like the acting seems to be pretty good and actually interesting challenge, right? To have these thoughts in, you know, being vocalized. You know what it reminds me of is, and we've plugged it on the show before, is the Apple TV original C, right? And this one, no one can see, they can only hear. And this is interesting. In a similar way that I can't quite put my finger on, but it's like playing with how people communicate and experience the world that is really interesting. I didn't smell any toxic masculinity, so hopefully they avoid toxic masculinity. But yeah, I think it's going to be really interesting, and I'm hoping we'll see. It says 2021, so hopefully this doesn't wait for the movie theaters to reopen in 10 years and actually opens. Because this is actually one movie that call me naive, but it could be some good sci-fi for once. So I'm going to hug it.
Hug!
All right, William, that brings an end to our trip into the midside. What did you learn?
I learned that I can see past The Last Jedi and see an actress in another character and not bring back those bad memories. Justin, what did you learn?
I learned something similar, that I'm not sexist. I can enjoy movies and want to see movies that have all female casts or mainly female casts. Mm-hmm. I mean, The Wild, Godmothered, I wasn't put off by the fact that it was women in those trailers. I was only put off by the social justice part of The Wild, but Godmothered, it didn't bother me. None of that bothered me.
I say that, midsiders out there, I say that facetiously to make a point in case anyone was wondering why I was saying that.
As always, thank you for listening. We greatly appreciate it. If you want to support us, you can do so through Patreon or Locals. Patreon is per episode. Locals is per month. TheMidside.com/Patreon. TheMidside.com/Locals. If you're a Liberty.me listener who found us through that website, thank you. We love our libertarian listeners. If you would like to buy my novel, you can do so in Kindle format, EPUB format, PDF format, assigned paperback format, or just a straight paperback on Amazon. You can do so at TheMidside.com/cut. This concludes our journey into the midside. I'm Justin Emblesneski reminding you that if things get tough, take a step back and witness the farce.
Have a mask and virus-free Thanksgiving. Now watch a listener complain that they got salmonella and it's a bacteria. Will we get sued?
Fuck if I know. I need the lawyer to contact me soon.